Welcome to the Business Isn't Usual podcast by Right Way. This is a podcast focused on topics relevant to New Zealand business owners with a real emphasis on providing practical ideas, tips and advice on how to move their business forward, especially in these challenging times. Today's podcast reviews the 2020 budget. We look at how this affects business owners and what they should be taking away from this budget. Joining me for this discussion is Greg Hughes, Senior Business Partner based in Wellington, Anna Steele, Associate Business Partner based in Rotorua, and Ernie Chan, Associate Business Partner and Tax Specialist from Nelson. We cover a lot in this podcast, but one of the main discussions we have is around business viability and how this links to the wage subsidy scheme and the small business cash flow loan scheme. If you enjoy this podcast, make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you're listening to this episode. We hope you enjoy. Welcome, Greg, Anna, and Ernie. Welcome to the podcast.
Kia ora.
Hey.
So this is our first for us. We've got three guests on the podcast. We're recording on video, and this is our budget special for 2020. And in the sort of preview video that went out yesterday, this is, you know, arguably the biggest budget we've seen in New Zealand's history, and obviously had great interest around the country. Before we go into a bit of discussion, let's just remind everyone of the key points. So, first of all, that's got the economic impact that was announced by the government. So, unemployment is forecasted to peak at 9.6% in September 2020, dropping to 4.2% within 2 years. GDP growth rates goes to a negative 4.6% for 2019-20 and stays negative until June 2022. That's a scary number. Deficit balloons to 28.3 billion this year, 29.6 next year, and it's forecasted to track back towards surplus by 2028. Net debt forecasts rise to 30.2% of GDP, and at a peak 53% in 2023, up to 19 and up from 19% in 2019. And then debts will rise from 58 billion in 2019 to 200 billion. Whoa, that's a lot of money. 2024. Key points that were announced by the government yesterday, $50 billion fund to deliver COVID-19 response and economic recovery plan. There's a lot in that, which we'll go into. The $4 billion business support package, that does include the $3.2 billion additional funds for the wage subsidy extension, $3 billion infrastructure investment and 8,000 public housing builds, $1.6 billion, which is probably the surprise one for trade and enterprise. That's a lot of money, $1 billion for environmental jobs, and $3.3 billion for new funding to strengthen core services, which is kind of the budget as usual, a little bit stuff, I think. But anyway, let's start. Who wants to go first? We'll go with Greg. Just initial thoughts, comments, Greg, on the budget for business owners, and what did you take away from it?
Well, it's a budget that I think any Minister of Finance would not want to present, on the basis being that they had no planning, no ability to plan, and didn't know what was coming up. So they try to put up a defence. I think in the main, good. I like the idea of the extension of the wage subsidy that's targeted. I like the idea of the plan for increasing training for apprentices. The flip side, though, is where are the jobs going to be for the apprentices that are trained? I suppose, so overall, my opinion, it's a C. I think the debt level is extremely scary. And at the end of the day, I think I'll congratulate the government at this stage of not increasing taxes, which would be a knee-jerk reaction, and to try and get the economy going. And that's where the big question mark is. We pay that debt back by growing the economy, and I don't see any plan to grow the economy.
Yep, yep. Ernie, your thoughts?
Yeah, I like how the budget has focused on jobs. Like Grant Robertson had said that it's all about jobs, jobs, and jobs. So, and with that, with building like a good solid economic platform, that's where the tax system can sort of can bounce back in a way that government can actually start recouping that money, essentially, because we have to remember that income tax is predominantly from corporate and individual income tax. And also with GST, is a significant portion of the tax take that we need businesses to be operating to gain that revenue.
Yep. Anna.
Yeah, I agree with both Greg and Ernie. Look, I think it's well intentioned and largely well targeted. If I'm a little underwhelmed, I was maybe expecting something a little bit more transformational, and probably listening to some of what Grant Robinson had been saying pre-budget and some of his discussions, like with the Wellington Chamber and stuff, I guess my expectations were a little bit different. Some of the things that they had obviously intended previously had to just go because this was an unexpected situation. I found it a little bit short-term, which I guess it has to be. We've got to get out of COVID-19. So there's sort of some short-term initiatives in areas that we expected, you know, there's healthcare and things like that. But I don't see those some of those initiatives as maybe addressing some of the underlying issues that have created those situations. So I feel like there's going to be more released over the coming days and weeks around what that's going to look like, and obviously still the $20 million in the coffers, $20 billion, sorry, not million, $20 billion, and how that gets
It's all about
spent.
The billions, Anna, not it's millions anymore. Billion. We want billions, thanks.
I know, yep. it's money.
It's just notes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So that $20 billion that's still left there, right, and how that gets utilised as well. But, yeah, like the other guys have said, it's about jobs. It's about trying to keep the economy going. It's sort of, you know, all of the things that we've heard on the news in the last 24 hours, it's about trying to keep the lights on. It's trying to stop the devastation now or the next few months.
I think, Stu, one thing that came out for me, it's still cherry-picked. I heard this morning the CEO of Sounds Air and talking yep. about how his business is basically not viable under these structures, but people can get on a bus, but they can't get on a plane under the same rules. It's almost like, on one hand, they need to go broad and say, these are the rules, make your business fit. On the other hand, they've turned around and said, well, here's some changes for the funeral industry and things like that. And I find that quite disturbing. I think the level playing field, and we'll talk about later on, about businesses being viable, but I feel that in many areas the government hasn't made industries viable. And a classic one would be, since I was on hospitality, is that how long can a cafe make money serving a coffee and a scone to the table?
Because
the wage cost just doesn't sustain it.
Yeah, and I think you're right, Greg, in the sense that they need to be broad, but then there are certain industries, tourism is the obvious one that's going to be hit, not just now, but significantly long-term with the restrictions on travel. Hospo is probably the second one, where there's other industries that are starting to get, wouldn't be back to normal, but there might be 70%, 80%, which is, you know, the mayor of Queenstown was saying, well, it's all very well, we're talking about 50%, we're at naught, you know. So how do you do broad when industries have different issues facing them stuff? I think that for me, I think, digesting it, there is a lot there. There is a lot of information. There's some big numbers. And in some ways, there's a lack of detail. As Anna said, there's $20 billion left in the coffers. I heard Dominic Stevens, the chief economist at Westpac, saying in some ways that's a good thing because if things go better than they think, they don't have to spend it. But also then they've got another little bit of kickstart. Let's delve into the big one, which most business owners are really happier with. I've seen good commentary from the Restaurant Association and accommodation sector saying that, you know, the wage subsidy is crucial. Ernie, you did a little bit of research because there is some slight changes here on the criteria. So Ernie, let's pass to you just to go through the details around what the wage subsidy changes are.
Yeah, right. So the wage subsidy, they thought that it was a really successful scheme when they initially put that out. So they're going to extend it from June onwards, and it's going to be targeted to businesses that have had a drop in revenue by 50% compared to the same time last year. So the initial wage subsidy scheme, it was a drop in 30%, but now it's sort of targeted at the businesses that have really suffered under this crisis.
And with the eligibility, am I right in saying that with the 50% now when they apply, they have to show that? Am I right in saying that, or am I wrong in saying that?
Yeah, that's right. I think it will follow the same course as the 30%, but I think there will be a lot more sort of stringent requirements surrounding that. Perhaps they'd be more likely to be audited later on.
Yeah, yeah.
Ernie, can I ask a question? What about a business that had a budgeted increase and can legitimately show that, and this might be a startup, for example, started up last, the start of the year, and the turnover is 50% down on forecast. Is that applicable?
Yeah, that was kind of the issue when the wage subsidy first came out in the first wave of that, the 30%, and there was that argument that, well, what if businesses had just started? And the government did ease on that position, and they did allow businesses in the first year to actually claim that wage subsidy. So I wouldn't see this being any different either if it was 50% down on their forecast. But I would imagine there would be a lot of, there needs to be a good detailed forecast in place.
Yep. They have listed here, and the information you sent around to us previously, only that they've talked about high growth businesses and new firms will continue to calculate their eligibility as under the existing scheme, which I know they kind of came out post when it was first launched around normalization and stuff. So look, Anna, someone that's based in Rotorua, an area that's funded by tourism, hospitality, a lot of the economy there is. What's your take on wage subsidy?
I think it's going to be useful for obviously a lot of tourism businesses, and interestingly, they have been talking to people here in Rotorua in some of the interviews I've heard, on Radio New Zealand and stuff. And it's sort of, there's sort of been a sigh of relief in that they can keep things going for another couple of months. Obviously, they're 8 weeks. Coming back to something Greg said earlier, I'm interested to know whether there's a viability test in that. Like, is there any point in keeping and paying out eight weeks of wage subsidy to a business that actually is going to go under anyway? And I'm sorry for the businesses that's going to happen to. I don't mean to be flippant about it, but it's a lot of money for if there's not a viability test in there as well. But I also think it gives a lot of businesses time to either repurpose their staff or pivot their businesses in some way to look at what the tourism boost in this budget is going to do for domestic tourism and bringing people into Rotorua. I think usually our domestic tourism is about 50%, so it's not for nothing, yeah. Whereas other parts of New Zealand have got a much lower rate of domestic tourism, so that's going to be much more challenging. So we need to, we want to obviously boost that above that 50% to make some businesses viable here. And so I think it's good for that 8 weeks. There's going to be some people though that after 8 weeks they still don't have if they've got, there was someone from Fox Glacier I think on the radio this morning that 98% or something of his businesses is overseas. So another 8 weeks isn't going to help businesses like that.
And it was interesting. I listened to an interview with Grant Robertson this morning, and he didn't rule out a third extension of this. And there's no doubt industries, hospitality is a classic one. They've only really started open the last few weeks. The wage subsidy makes complete sense for these guys as they start to get back up into some form of normality. But 70-80% of revenue, at least, I suppose. To take a small tangent here, and look, this is, I guess, we'll call this the controversial part of the podcast. So, if for all listeners, you might want to sit down. Let's talk about business viability here, because there are businesses who, and Fox Glacier, they were great business, but what's happened, complete under control, out of their control. Saying that, there is a bunch of businesses going into this who weren't great, were not the best shape. So, there was that point that Greg and Anna have made here on, are we just prolonging the inevitable? I don't know. Greg, do you want to just, what's your thoughts about this? Because we've also got in here, you know, this morning, 25,000 businesses applied for the wage, not the wage subsidy, the cash flow loan scheme. Yeah, that's more debt, which they can then go on personally after you. Like, Greg, what's your advice to your business? Because there's got to be some honest conversations at some point on what the future holds, and that might be a reduction in your business, or right through to shutting up shop. But, Greg, business viability in this environment.
So what I've been saying to my clients is that look at your business before this all happened, and was it viable? Was the structure what you wanted? Were you making a return? And why would you go back to that if it wasn't ticking the box then?
Yeah.
So that doesn't mean close the door. Obviously, it means what can you do different? The thing that scares me about this is that this is a classic case of a man overboard and you're throwing him a life raft. Unfortunately, the life raft is not tied off to the boat, so you just float away on the life raft. And yep. there are businesses there that mean that they can pay this month's creditors. I suppose if you want to be absolutely callous about it, they can pay debts down that they might have a personal guarantee against. But don't forget that if you take this loan, you are making a statement that your business is viable. Yeah. And that is not something that is said lightly. And I would strongly suggest that a lot of businesses are saying, I'll take the money and hope. And frankly, can you blame them?
No, exactly.
It does come back to the point I said before, is I think the subsidy needed to be in a manner, or not subsidy, but the support needed to be in a manner that was across industries and recognising the pressures within them. So a cafe may or may not have been viable before. You take the loan to pay the bills, but if that cafe has to still have table service only,
yep,
under that model, it'll never be viable. So you've got to look at the practicalities of the restrictions on that.
Yep. Ernie, what's your thoughts in the sort of conversations with your clients about this viability question?
Yeah, I've advised my clients where they have felt the impact, but they don't need it just yet. I say to them to just hold off, because there are other options at the moment, particularly with their tax obligations. They can actually arrange installment arrangements with IRD and have these payments deferred. In essence, that's a loan in itself from the IRD, and it's interest-free without penalties. So why not take advantage of that first before we go down the track of looking to see whether we need that loan?
Yep. Good advice there, Ernie. Anna, viability.
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? Because people are hurting already. So having to have a conversation about whether or not their business was, you know, this might have just hastened for some people what was going to be the inevitable demise anyway. Maybe it was just going to take a year or two, whereas now it's going to take potentially a month or two. Mm. I think it's a space that people need to be much more careful of than potentially they are. Like, that, it worries me to hear that 25,000 people have already applied for the loan scheme. And have they actually considered that viability test? Because if I was going to borrow money off anybody, I wouldn't want it to be the Inland Revenue, because they will find me. Yeah. you know, like, you're not getting away from them. That's you're not. They will come after you personally. They will, and that's, they will find you. So I think that people are almost seeing it as free money, which it's not. And I think people need to actually be addressing it, very similar to what Greg said, to be honest with you. People actually need to be addressing those fundamentals of their business and thinking about what it is they actually want out of it in a way that they look forward to the future, rather than just trying to stay afloat, which sounds hard, because at the moment we do just have to try and stay afloat. But yeah, that viability bit, I think, is not being addressed enough by some of these measures.
Yeah.
In the context of that, the government aren't saying clearly enough that, yeah, here's the loan scheme, but actually you need to make sure that you are going to be a viable business to pay us this back. Because I think especially around things like the loan scheme, the inland revenue are going to be much tougher in their auditing and checking of it than they have been previously with the wages subsidy, because they don't want to loan $10,000 to 100 businesses or 1,000 businesses or 25,000 businesses that aren't going to be around in 12 months.
And I think, but then I think, to be fair, and I think the pressure the government are under in this is the speed, because there is also an immediate need to get, you know, and I think that's one of the things the government has done exceedingly well, is the speed wage subsidy within days paid out, 48 hours, 24 hours of payment. But that's the pressure they're under in this, you know, crazy world. Greg, you're going to make a point there.
It's a cynic in me as well, comes back as, by these businesses.
Is that the grey hair, Greg?
I did have a haircut yesterday.
I got a haircut. It was very exciting.
Yes, I was. I even bet my wife to get one. So the point is to use a overused statement, it is flattening the curve of unemployment. Yep. So if businesses are taking the 10K, then falling over, then they're going on the dole later. That's a cynic in me. Unfortunately, it doesn't help the individual. I mean, also, there was the loan scheme for businesses that turned over $250,000 sales to 5 million sales. The interesting thing with that loan scheme that was announced 4 weeks ago, I think it was, is it actually it put the banks in a potential breach, because the banks were still obliged to meet the criteria that they could not lend money to businesses that could not afford to repay it. And so businesses are coming along saying, I want to borrow money to stay afloat. And the banks had to say, well, if you don't need this money, if you need this money and you're going to fall over, then you can't pay it back. So it's a catch-22. And so that's why, of the $6 billion put aside, I think only $230 million has actually been advanced, because it's not a viable option. This is similar. If you think about it, we're not talking hundreds of thousands, we're talking 10,000, 20,000. But the question still has to be asked, should a business be taking the loan if they have not got the ability? A client of mine received the loan yesterday, and we've got forecasting going, and we have adamantly put in place starting July, so we have 1 month holiday where we're repaying that loan equally over 11 months. So they got the big amount of money in straight away, and then they all get up trading again, and I think they're paying back $1,200 or something of that nature per month. So that at the end of the period, it's interest-free, or if it's not, there's so little left, it doesn't make any difference. And having discipline put in place.
On that point, Greg, and I know this is supposed to be up about the budget, but this is a big part of the budget and the economic recovery package, is, you know, without obviously going specifics to name that client, but what is the example that client is using those funds for? Is it just working capital? What is the example there?
And frankly, the money should be used for timing. So if you have an accounts receivable ledger, people owe you money and they're slow paying you, what this does is, in old terms, it's factoring. You're taking your accounts receivable ledger and you're factoring it to the IRD at no interest, and then you're spending the year recovering it. I think if that's your approach, go for it. If you're turning around going, if I don't take it, I'm going to close the doors, and you go, fine. If you're going to close the doors, if you keep the doors open, when will sales be at a level that makes your business sustainable and able to repay that loan? I don't know. I can't see it happening. Then there's your answer. You don't take it.
Yeah, correct. Right, back onto course, budget. One of the big parts, which are, you know, 20-odd% of our clients here at Rightway are in the construction sector, and I personally thought this was one of the real smart moves of the budget, was the big investment in the trade and apprenticeship training package. The biggest amount of that was $412 million to support the support of for employers to retain and keep their apprentices on, which I thought was quite a cool thing. But there's lots of different things there about training to different, you know, move people out of jobs where they've become unemployed into areas which we've obviously got jobs available. Hearing the sort of the apprenticeship bodies this morning, they're obviously very excited about what this can be. Come to you first, Ernie. What's your thought on this big investment in trade and apprenticeship schemes?
Oh, I think it's great. I think it's great upskilling and retraining people that have been made redundant throughout this process. And also it sort of increases the base from which projects can be made, essentially. I think they talk about a lot of these big infrastructure projects that need to happen in a recession. And this is a good example of actually helping that project go forward.
Yep. Anna, your thoughts?
Jobs.
Jobs.
Yeah, you know, it's it was noted, you know, after our last massive downturn of the GFC that apprentices got the chop. So having that ability to keep them on, and it's about, as Ernie just said, reskilling away from where the jobs have been lost and putting them into the sectors that we do. Look, construction's gonna potentially go off, isn't it? I'm sure there'll be some projects that will go on hold from in the commercial space, but the intention of this budget is there's a bunch that go on, you know, government led, shovel ready. Haven't quite figured out what those are yet, but the intention is absolutely, and we need a place to put people. We need a place to take, and that's really encouraging, I think. And the same with that move of those opportunities and putting some into the primary sector was interesting to see too. Taking things that are going to be useful for farming, you know, and reducing pests, you know, wilding pines, things like that, that can make farming more productive, and reskilling people into those jobs that are potentially not as low wage as and not just low wage, you know, and good for the country environmentally, for the primary sector, which, let's face it, it's going to keep us afloat.
Yes.
So yeah, so really encouraging.
Greg.
I totally applaud the plan to retain apprentices. I think, as Anna said, one of the biggest failings from even pre-GFC and other times of major recessions, where we've cut off the low-hanging staff and paid the price. So that, I think, outstanding. I think to train people up, outstanding. I'm a little bit concerned that this comes back to having the economy cranking again, that we can train people, but where are the jobs for them? And yep. We can say jobs. With all due respect, KiwiBuild didn't deliver, and no one has asked the government where are these 8,000 state houses going to be built from, because the record to date has been less than appalling. Yep, fantastic to get the people trained, but it would be just a deferment if we train people up and then put them on unemployment.
So we've got to have 2 years.
Correct.
We've got plan to get the economy going.
That's what's missing. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what you're saying. That's probably put the concerns from my part anyway when I read about it is. They've secured short term some areas, and I think the apprenticeship schemes are a great thing. We don't want to become 2 years down the track when, say the example, the economy is booming, we don't actually have the workforce to deliver construction, all that kind of stuff. But on the flip side, my concern a little bit about the budget is I'm not quite sure within this budget is there's a little bit of a feel that we're going to throw a lot of money at things, hoping that drives things. I just don't. Coming back to your point, Greg, in some ways we need to play some bets here a little bit. I think there is certain sectors which we know will weather the storm really well. Primary sector, primary industries are really well. Now there is a bunch of funding around exporters and making sure we get our products out to the market. But, you know, the one thing that I noted down is, you know, we look at, and Xero posted their results yesterday and with the first time they've ever made profit. You know, these New Zealand companies, Xeros of the world, in the technology sector, they're becoming our biggest exports. But there doesn't seem to be much to say, well, hey, look, that's a sector which is going to still continue to grow. It's going to still have global appeal. What are we doing that? So that's just my little concerns about how are we actually going to get this economy moving?
Yeah, and that was one of my...
Anna, we'll go Anna first, Greg.
That was one of, and look, there's potentially either more information coming about it, or I haven't delved into all the necessary documents enough yet, is exactly that. And retraining, but retraining into sectors that we can move into in the future, not just retraining for hammer and, you know, on the tools now, but what's coming next, because and technology seems to be a place that in New Zealand we could do really well, because we are quite a high tech country. You know, we're most of us are reasonably well educated. Some of my school teachers may beg to differ, but you know, but it also at the advantage of moving out of some of those some of those lower wage jobs as well, you know, and into a higher wage economy and retraining into that space. So I haven't yet seen anything there, but then that lack of sort of a plan of how we're going to move forward also seems to be missing. So I'm hoping that comes over the days and weeks to come, that there is a cohesive plan for that.
Yeah. Greg?
I was also going to say is we are starting from a very small base. We are a country in the population of Melbourne.
Yeah.
Our tourists were roughly our population. Our annual tourists are 4 to 5 million people from overseas. So that doesn't happen anymore. And who knows when the borders will be open for that. I suspect that even when we go trans-Tasman, most of the people crossing the ditch either way will be to see family and friends, not just on a holiday. I think people will holiday local.
Go Rotorua, hey Anna.
Yeah.
Not that we're biased, because we have a lot of clients all over the country listen to this, but so everywhere is a great location. For example, Ernie's in Nelson, another lovely part of the world. And why can I for Greg?
Yeah, exactly. So the question comes back again, and this is again where you've got to have some business nous behind the planning, is that we can look at Australia, they can do things wrong and they'll still come out all right, because they're so big. America is 50 individual countries that often don't like each other under one banner, you know. So we are a country the size of Japan or Great Britain, England, Great Britain, by landmass, with a population of Melbourne, and we are expecting to grow the economy. Well, that just won't happen by default.
Yep.
And this is not a time to have working groups. It is a time actually to be really bold, come out, pick the winners. And dare I say it again, even though the last few years have been unpopular, agriculture or the land has been our saviour and will continue to be our saviour, because people still want to eat and they want to eat our quality. I know the film industry has something like a 70-to-1 ratio local employees to overseas employees. That's fantastic. The IT is not actually a huge employer by ratio of revenue to staff numbers. I mean, it's a great export in itself, but it's a very efficient industry employee can create a lot.
I'm agreeing with you entirely. I think that plan somehow needs to encompass primary industry is where our strength, the land is where our strength lies, and however we utilize that, right? That's our greatest asset, right? If we think about that in an economic term, because, sorry, Stu, you're outnumbered by the accountants in the room, obviously, or in four separate rooms.
I did economics at university. Thank you very much, Anna.
Oh,
I know what I'm talking about.
Accountants. Yeah, I mean, our land is that biggest asset, right? So, and looking at the opportunities within primary and boosting that, but then also, and I guess maybe I'm going off tangent, but hey, looking at the tourism, the tourism initiatives that they're talking about, how to diversify tourism or pivot tourism, well, that has to come into that whole New Zealand Inc. planning and encompass rural as well. That's our biggest. It should be about selling New Zealand products to the tourists, and use that as like some sort of marketing platform. So when they go home to France, or whenever they're allowed back into the country, that is, that they remember New Zealand produce and want to buy it when they're overseas. You know what I mean? So that growing that food sector in New Zealand about selling really good New Zealand produce, and that bolsters obviously the rural sector, that bolsters tourism, it bolsters Māori the sector as well, because they're heavily into either ag or tourism. But there has to be a plan, and that's the bit that I think I haven't seen yet.
Conscious of time, and there's a couple of things I still want to cover off. So, you mentioned tourism. There was 400 million announced for the tourism sector across kind of four kind of key areas: a tourism transition program, help to deliver advice support for businesses, help to pivot towards domestic and Australian market. The one part that I was quite excited about was the strategic tourism asset protection program. Some of the key tourism assets in the form of attractions, amenities play a vital role, so protecting them, which completely makes sense. A tourism recovery ministers group. This will establish overseeing the tourism recovery package and a task force. So, look, tourism is an area which needs a lot of support through this time, and is also the assets need to be there for when we turn it on. I won't. Let's not go discussion. I want to just pass on to Ernie because while there wasn't any, tax announcements or anything like that, there has been a number of announcements over the last, 4 weeks of changes of what they're doing, and this is a big part. I was looking in the sort of the details this morning. There's billions of dollars sort of are in these tax sort of schemes and announcements they've done. So, Ernie, do you want to just remind the listeners what's been announced previously around tax and particularly for business owners?
Yeah, sure thing. So, tax-wise, there were sort of two main announcements made during the whole COVID lockdown. The main one was the loss carryback scheme, where if a business is looking to be in a loss for the 2021 year, they can actually use this loss to carry it back to a previously profitable year. And this releases the tax paid from that previous year into the taxpayer's hands, immediately. So that in itself is a good cash flow injection for these businesses. There's also a test where usually when businesses or companies, when they carry forward losses, they need this shareholding continuity test. But they've actually done away with that now because they recognize that there will be a lot of shareholding changing hands through new investment, through new ventures. So they look to this test, which is called a same or similar business test. And this actually does allow free flow of capital to go between companies and investors without the loss of these tax losses, which is an asset to a lot of companies. The final one I want to talk about is the leniency of IRD remitting their interest and penalties on late payments. So, in deferring these tax obligations, we're actually getting the benefit of the cash currently. So those were the main sort of tax announcements made. There were some other ones, which was the ability to deduct up to $5,000 in this 2021 year of any assets that have been paid. Usually these go onto the fixed asset register of the company and depreciated, but we can actually take a one-off deduction. They're sort of encouraging businesses to to spend and invest. So that's actually a good thing.
Cool. Thanks, Ernie. Look, guys, I'm conscious of time. I guess that we'll try and put as many of the links, especially to sort of the official announcements, articles and stuff, in the show notes. But I guess we'll just go for closing comments now. We'll start, Greg, with you. Any sort of closing comments? And I think not just about the business, but not just about the budget, sorry, but just advice for business owners now as we're into level two, and what your advice would be.
The numbers being borrowed or thrown around are huge and scary. My advice to business owners is you can't do anything about those. So park that to one side and don't panic. Look at your own business. Try and make it as efficient as possible. Don't assume because you've done something in the past that you should carry on doing it that way. Don't assume you've got an automatic right of survival. And seek advice, get support. And, you know, we've lived through these before and these times, and we've come out the other end okay. And let's just keep focusing on that.
Yep. Ernie, from you, final comments.
Yeah, I tend to agree with Greg, to just focus on your own business, take advantage of what IID are offering. And if you don't know any of these rules, talk to your accountant. And I think, we'll get there.
Yep. Anna, final comments from you.
Tough going last on that one, isn't it? I don't think everyone will get there, which is going to suck. So I think people need to be working very much on their plan for the future in survival mode at the minute, but also from a business continuity perspective. And I honestly actually think they need to be preparing for whatever the next zombie apocalypse is, because if we've learnt anything from this, is that having some inbuilt resilience in your business, which is in your processes and how you run your business, as well as financially, is what we should be aiming for. And that's actually probably something that I am hoping comes out of that budget and some of that targeted funding towards small businesses, is building that in. So the businesses that are going to survive, they really need to be considering that and getting advice on how to do that, because there will be something else in the future. And whether that's as big as this or it's something that is significant for them personally or just for their sector, there's going to be something else. And potentially there's going to be another one of these. You know, the warnings are that this might not be the last time we have a global pandemic. So, yeah, plan and figure out how you can diversify or whatever it is that your business needs to do, because most of the businesses we're talking about is actually people like us. We're not, you know, it directly affects your personal life and well-being.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think the final notes from me, I think my advice to business owners at the moment is, and all three, you know, Ernie, Greg and Anna have mentioned this, is that you've got to have a plan here. You've got to have, you know, a clear, using tools like forecasting, and for me is just a no-brainer. You've got to actually understand what options are ahead of you and what happens if decisions making, if you make decisions, what that will mean for your business and viability. So it's an opportunity also to make sure we have businesses come out stronger, as you said, Anna, but and also diversify potentially, as you said, Greg, that are, you know, better for not just profitability, but also design better for the business owner and actually delivering the life they want. So that's a wrap up from our budget special. Hope you've enjoyed it, but thanks everyone for joining us.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Ka kite.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Business Isn't Usual podcast by Right Way. If you want to find out more information about Right Way, simply go to www.rightway.co.nz. If you want to subscribe, please do that on the platform that you're listening to this podcast. And while you're there, please feel free to give us a review. If you want to keep up to date with other information from Right Way, check out the Right Way Business Hub Facebook group, where there's ongoing information posted weekly. Also, check out all our other social media channels for all the updates from Right Way.